And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along till Thursday's 9 till noon show. It is the last day of October. It is Halloween, the 31st of October 2024. And I hope you're all very well indeed. And I hope you have a spooktacular day. We're here, of course, for the next 3 hours to keep you informed and hopefully entertained with our usual mix of news, features and conversation. We want you involved throughout, and I'll remind you of those contact details because we really love listening to you. Maybe you want to text us something with a Halloween theme. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. You can give us a call if you wish, 07491 25 000, 07491 25 000. It's Donna Marie and Shannon looking after you today. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, if you listen to the podcast or indeed overnight, we love to hear from you as well. You're part of the family. You can email comments@highlandradio.com, or for that matter, text or WhatsApp, and we can pick them up that way. Right, it is a Thursday morning, and let's have a look at those newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune: a Letterkenny man, Frank O'Donnell, who has recently resigned from Fine Gael, is to contest the general election as an independent candidate. The Rathmullen native is not short of political experience, having previously been actively involved with the Fine Gael party for over 20 years. Until recent weeks, he was the chair of the Fine Gael branch in Letterkenny and says he'd become disillusioned with the party at a national level, with the mantra that the Republic of Ireland is the best place to be on earth. And interesting too, I noticed inside there's a full big page spread on Fine Gael's John McNulty. Where has it gone? It's in there anyway. Of course, because John McNulty from Ardraw, but obviously using the newspaper and hoping to use the newspaper as a way of sort of reaching voters up this part of the world as well. Just an update from this paper as it relates to the school in Milford that we did an hour on there last week. Minister Charlie McConnell has confirmed that a senior official from the Department of Education will carry out an inspection at Milford National School in the coming 3 weeks, as the urgency of the cramped conditions on site have reached a breaking point. The minister said he believes that the hopes of the community will now become a reality, and he feels more confident following assurances from Minister Norma Foley last week. That being said, the press release we got from the Department of Education was not that encouraging. They kind of were saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, look, we offered them a couple of buildings or a couple of classrooms on the site that they're on, and that's the way we kind of try and do things, you know, to avail of sites that are already under the ownership, and if we might look at it again into the future. As I say, that is a rough paraphrase there, but obviously things more optimistic, it would seem, following that meeting, because the school feels that site's just too cramped. They've no green space. There's dangerous steps and cramped classrooms. They really need some decent investment there. The Derry News this morning: council backs call for reinstatement of winter fuel payment. Derry City and Strabane District Council have voted unanimously calling for the reinstatement of the winter fuel payment at a special meeting of council on Tuesday. People Before Profit Councillor Sean Harkin proposed the motion to endorse the Unite the Union initiated pledge letter signed onto by all of the stalwart parties calling for the reinstallment of the winter fuel payment. And I suppose that's showing a bit of sport, but will have no meaningful impact on that payment being restored, of course. It's just not the way it works, unfortunately. Let's go to the Nationals, and shocking scenes coming out of Spain. Unbelievable stuff. Many of you have probably been to Valencia. I think you can fly directly into it, can't you? But some of the images of a year's worth of rain effectively falling in a couple of hours. Cars just, it's amazing the power and the destructive nature of water. Just washing cars like toys down a street until such time as they reach a narrow point of the road and just start piling up on top of each other. 95 are dead in the Valencia region. They anticipate that will rise. And this is an area that suffered incredible heat waves during the summer. Many of your holidays out there were almost unbearable because of the amount of heat. And now the city streets, some of the images, they look like rivers. The worst flash floods eastern Spain has seen in four decades have left more than 95 people dead, many others missing, and left many areas in chaos. Torrential rainfall began on Tuesday night and continued into yesterday in the Valencia region on the Mediterranean coast, as well as parts of neighbouring Andalusia and Castel La Mancha. Streets were flooded as rivers burst their banks, bridges collapsed, and cars, often with drivers inside them, were pushed along by the water. But by last night, 95 deaths had been confirmed, almost all of them in Valencia, amid fears that the death toll would increase further. "The whole of Spain cries with you," the Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said, addressing those affected. "We will make available all the resources necessary so that we can recover from this tragedy. We won't leave you alone." The farming community also devastated by this. Most of the citrus fruit grown in Spain is grown in this region, and those fields are buried underwater. What that means for crops and incomes there. Perhaps maybe you were out there or in that area during those floods, and maybe you care to recount the experience. Let us know. 086 60 25,000. The Irish Daily, Irish Daily Mail reports this morning of confidence in COVID inquiry hit. "The COVID-19 inquiry into how the government handled the pandemic will not be able to compel people to give evidence, prompting major concerns about how effective it will be. It will also not be a tribunal and will not be an inquest," the government has said, "and nor will it be led by a judge, as was the case in the UK for COVID-19 inquiry." Now, effectively, this inquiry is just to say, right, we got that right, we got that wrong. No one's to blame. And that's what it's all about. It's not about finding a person responsible, or maybe you have your the knives out for Houlihan or whatever it might be. It's not going to be that kind of inquiry. They're going to look at it and go, what could we have done better? Should we have closed schools as soon as we did? That kind of stuff. So it's not going to have any teeth. It's not going to be judge-led. It's not going to be a tribunal. "The hearings will not be televised. However, they will be held in public and could be streamed online. Campaigners for the elderly and those who need support are now questioning whether the inquiry will be worthless, while one TD said the lack of compellability is not good enough." Now, in fairness, the UK tribunal was pretty worthless as well, because it was in the news for while it was running, and then that's the end of it. Nothing to come from it. Reading on here, though, Fine Gael deputy Fergus O'Dowd, who has spoken strongly of the impact of the pandemic on the elderly, told the Irish Daily Mail, "It's about the truth. How do we find out the truth? If significant players refuse to cooperate or turn up, that's not good enough. That's not acceptable." What would you like to see in it, though? What would you like to come from this tribunal? Look, I mean, it was clear at the time. It was very clear at the time. Say, for instance, in the first instance, that the older people were more vulnerable. And even just one thing, and people were being discharged from hospitals into nursing homes where the most vulnerable were. It had happened in Italy, and we started doing the exact same thing over here. And I remember talking about it at the time and asking questions about that, thinking there's something seriously wrong here. Why are we moving people who are sick into areas where people are most vulnerable? That's the kind of stuff they're going to look at. They're not going to be finding anyone responsible for that. They're going to say, look, it was a panic situation. We did what we had to do, and so on and so forth. So it's going to cost a lot of money, and I don't know what will come from it. I anticipate very little, but what would you like to see coming from it, I suppose, is a question. Paul McGinley has given a very open interview to a podcast where he talked an awful lot about his father, who would be, as Paul is, familiar to listeners here in Donegal, of course, given their really strong connections to the area. In the Irish Independent, Paul McGinley has described the challenge of managing his father's dementia as a huge toll on everybody in the family and a huge commitment, with the Dubliner adding that he feels he must give back. Speaking in a wide-ranging interview on the IndoSport podcast with Joe Malloy, McGinley spoke candidly about what has been a difficult period for his family. During the pandemic, his dad, Mick, was diagnosed with dementia. His mother, Julia, died last July and suffered with aphasia, I believe it is, a language disorder that affects the ability to communicate. McGinley said the suddenness of his parents' health problems really affected his family. Anybody who has battled dementia will know it's a horrible, debilitating illness, the 2014 Ryder Cup captain said. We're 4 or 5 years into this now, and you know, every year it's decreasing. You don't really see it in front of your eyes, but when you look back to what he was doing this time last year, that's when it hits home how much he's even gone down from last year. And that's a story and that will resonate with an awful lot of people listening to this show today. The Irish Farmers Journal, over 20% difference in vet bills for TB tests. There's a huge variation in TB testing charges across the country, an Irish Farmers Journal survey has revealed. The average TB testing cost for farmers surveyed in Connacht, £6.66 a head, based on a 50-animal herd. This was 20% higher than the average prices paid by farmers in Leinster, who were paying £5.52 per head, based on the same 50-animal herd. The per head cost is based on two call-outs, tests and reading, plus the individual animal charge. However, individual farmers reported much bigger differences on both call-out charges and individual animal testing charges. The most expensive call-out charge reported to the Irish Farmers Journal was €160 in Galway, while the cheapest was £50 in County Limerick. Let's just go to page four to see if there's a map. It's always helpful, is the map. But no, there is no map. I don't know where Donegal sits. Ulster, Cavan, Monaghan, Donegal. Call-out charge here, €72. And the TB test cost per head, £4.45. So it's pretty much smack bang in between the most expensive in Munster and the least expensive in Leinster. So you're pretty average there. Not being ripped off, but you're not being ripped on. The Irish Daily Star this morning. A man found in possession of nearly 800 images of child sexual abuse material has received his sentence. Now, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritties of this, but I think all of us who have any interest in the care and nurturing of children would understand what a child has to go through before there's an image. As I say, that's as deep as I'm going into it. But a man, he was found in possession of nearly 800 images of child sexual abuse material. He received a suspended sentence, no prison time at all. Dublin Circuit Criminal Court heard yesterday that Gardaí carried out a search of the residence of Mark Moran, a 44-year-old, in June 2015 and seized a number of devices after receiving a tip-off from police in Britain. When these devices were analysed, 782 images and 20 movies of child sexual abuse material were discovered. Moran of Ashbrook Terrace, Salamant Avenue, Ranelagh, Dublin 6, pleaded guilty to possession of child sexual abuse material referred to in law as child pornography. There's moves on to try and change that terminology, and the sooner it is done, the better. And fair play to the paper, actually, for describing it what it is rather than what it's referred to in criminal law. Moran has no previous convictions, has not come to Garda attention since the incident. Garda John Walsh agreed with James Dwyer, senior counsel defending, that the analysis of the devices was delayed due to a shortage of resources, and Moran wasn't arrested until 2020. Judge Martin Nolan, who's quite a well-known judge at this stage, said a substantial amount of material was found, noting this type of offending is of a serious nature. He said the legal precedent from the Court of Appeal is that a non-custodial option must be considered in the absence of aggravating features. So that's it. And we were talking yesterday about, and we were speaking to a young man, Jack, and we were talking about how widespread cocaine usages, amphetamines, all other types of drugs, you know, that they're easiest to get as fast food, for that matter, piece of cake, Facebook, Snapchat. And you'd imagine then when the Gardaí go to the bother of being undercover, going through the investigation, trying to get the drugs off the street, trying to apprehend those that are responsible for it. Because obviously, you know, one person deals, how many people are taking drugs as a result of that? And I note yesterday, I don't have the details directly in front of me, but there was such a case between before the courts yesterday and no custodial sentence. Community service, I believe, was given in that case. I'll double check that a little later on. The Irish Daily Mirror. Education Minister Norma Foley has said it is clear missing 8-year-old Kyron Doran was lost in the system. Speaking at government buildings, she told the Irish Mirror that she expects to receive a report on the child's disappearance this week. Kyron was first reported missing to Gardaí in August after Tusla raised significant concerns about the young child. They effectively called to the house and noticed he wasn't there 2 years after he disappeared. He had been living in Dundalk. He's now missing and presumed murdered, with Gardaí investigating if he has been missing for 2 years. It's understood his school believed he was moving to another school in the north at the end of 21-22. And as I said at that time, I don't know what can come from that, how things can improve, but if a child, and as I say, I know lots of you talked about the COVID inquiry earlier on, I know lots of you had children that were getting sniffles all the time when they were off for in excess of 20 days around about that time, and getting emails or letters from the school, which people found quite offensive given the world we were in. But getting letters and emails off the schools to sort of say, well, why is your child not in? You know, you need to explain this, or we're going to have to report you to TUSLA. I'm sure some of you listening got that. And here we have a 2-year-old, an 8-year-old, though he never, it seems, reached age, tragically, who they just believe is in a different country, and that's that. You know, we should definitely have a system. I believe that if a child, there should be welfare checks, even if you know the parents and they're saying, right, we're off to Cork or whatever. There should definitely be a system where, you know, 6 months in, there's just a little welfare check to make sure the child is safe and well. I mentioned this on the show yesterday, and it's reported in the papers today. This is the Irish Daily Sun. Nearly half of you out there, you parents, give their children pocket money with digital wallets, the most popular method followed by cash. So pocket money is more is dished out more digitally than via cash. The average age children start being given money is 9, and most parents say they need to learn, need to earn it by doing some household chores. Paul Roach, chief of the Teachers Union of Ireland's Credit Union, he's the Teachers Union of Ireland Credit Union, okay, which ran the study, said the notion of pocket money is relatively common. Giving a child a small financial reward can be valuable in teaching them financial responsibility. What I thought was interesting about that, the scales have already tipped. Most of you are actually giving the money digitally, transferring it from your Revolut to a junior account or similar apps. All right, that's the papers. If there's anything contained within there that you want to comment on, please get in touch with us now. 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and text. And good morning to Mark and Kathy, among the hundreds watching the show across various platforms and on our website. Just to let you know that you can watch all of our guests, be it in studio or via video, by going onto our YouTube channel if you're at home on your smart TV or Fire Stick, Highland Radio Ireland. Give us a like and subscribe if you don't mind. You can fire it up there on your big TV rather than watching This Morning or some other nonsense about things happening in a different country. Or you can watch us across our Facebook pages and on the X platform. Now, we don't necessarily have a complete figure to show the level of homelessness in Donegal. We have sort of northwest figures, but that doesn't count everyone because the system doesn't really work like that. But amongst them is Emmett McGrath, who is who is homeless, homeless in Donegal. Emmett, thanks for your time this morning.
Yes, Greg, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Emmett? Because, you know, your life's upside down here at the moment. You've been effectively living in your Jeep for a year.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the council haven't really done much, to be honest. I'm still on a waiting list, and they had a house up in Bridge End there, and they put my name down for it, and it wasn't accepted on it. And the social welfare cut me off in August, and I have been off since, as I say, the 2nd of August, and I had no income coming in since then.
And how did you find yourself in this situation? Without going into any personal details, you were living in accommodation up until a year ago?
Yeah, that's correct. I was in accommodation for a year, and they stopped that just because they said they were paying too much towards homeless accommodation.
And at any point were you being supported to live in emergency accommodation? What was the situation there?
Well, they had supported me for so long, but it was only the year they'd done. But once the year was up, they told me now they wouldn't be able to do no more for me. And they'd given me more vouchers there recently, but no, we're sticking them.
And now you find yourself with your social welfare stop, so you've no, have you any income at all?
Say,
on it? How are you supporting yourself?
I'm not able to work or nothing as well because of my arm. The Letterkenny Hospital fucked my arm up when I was younger, and I'm starting to get sore now, you know, like arthritis and that.
Well, apologies for the language, but I understand the situation you find yourself in. So you can't work, you're not on social welfare, and you're living in a Jeep. How do you keep going?
I don't actually know. I just do. I think my daughter, my daughter kind of keeps me going. Well, I thought of her in my head. She kind of keeps me going, really. But other than that, I don't have no fight left on me.
And what do you want from? I presume it's support from the local authority.
I'm not asking very much. I would just like to be housed and, you know, a bit of welfare coming on and try and get back on my feet again, really.
Have you been offered anything answers? Like a hotel room or anything like that?
Nothing. The council's given me vouchers and I haven't been given no help in nothing.
And they stopped the vouchers because they said it was too expensive?
Yep, that's correct. And I was paying so much towards the hotel myself as well, along with the council.
Yeah, quite a lot of money, actually.
Yes, I was paying so much every week, so was. Yeah. And then I ended up, then I was paying it myself then, because they'd cut it off, and I had nowhere to go, so I still had to stay in the frontier itself. So I was paying the whole payment myself for weeks there, so it was, when I was on the frontier.
And as you say, your name was down for a one-bedroomed house in Bridgend, but you missed out there.
Yes, somebody else got the location. Like, I know, when I'm from Bridgend all my life, I thought it would made sense to give it to somebody from the area rather than giving it to a complete outsider. I'm not trying to be racist or trying to be, you know, unhelpful towards any other people, but, you know, beneficial towards somebody that lives in the area.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, you're living in your Jeep. Obviously, you're going to look on and form an opinion. It wouldn't make you a bad person. And in terms of any of the organisations that support homeless, Emmett, you know, are there any hostel facilities or anything like that in your area?
No, there's no hostels in my area. Nope. As I say, then Letterkenny, the closest, like the Donegal County Council was wanting me to go to Ballyshannon to stay in homeless accommodation, to come back to Cairndonagh to see councillors on a weekly basis. Like,
and I mean,
so
obviously,
it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You've been through one winter and a relatively mild summer. You are at the moment facing into another winter in your Jeep, effectively.
That's correct. Yes, that's not ideal.
Yeah.
To get showers, my clothes washed and all on a weekly basis, no time to keep clean and hygienically rightly.
But you feel that with everything that you've been through, you feel that you're sort of losing the fight now a little bit?
Yes, sort of, yeah, because every time I've had a wee bit step forward, I'm definitely going backwards, like.
Yeah.
And having counsellors involved and stuff like that doesn't seem to work. No, counsellors... there's a councillor local to me, he's been very helpful, but other than that, I'm still not getting what I'm supposed to be getting, the help that I'm entitled to.
Yeah, and I mean, again, sorry, I think I asked, but I maybe missed your answer. Why did they cut your social welfare? Because at least...
Me, because I'm no fixed abode, I have no address, and then they were looking for air codes, and they're actually now, the social welfare is actually looking for a letter from the landowner that I'm currently sitting on.
Yeah, okay. It's a desperate situation.
They're putting me through all the obstacles they can. To me, personally, the social welfare don't want me on the social welfare, but I'm genuinely, it's needed.
Well, you're desperate, obviously. It's a desperate situation.
I'm not taking the hand out of nothing. Like, I've been straight with everything.
Yeah, you've no income and you're living in a car.
Exactly.
Right, well, listen, we'll make contact with the council to see what the situation is. They might say we don't comment on individual cases, but I mean, you know, I don't think anyone sort of wants to be part of a society or a community that sort of leaves people behind, like you're being left behind here, because what you're looking for is a bit of stability to get back up on your feet properly.
At the end of the day, I've been working hard up until now, all my life, paying my taxes, you know, a bit of respect backwards, you know, it works both ways.
All right.
It works both ways.
All right, Emmett, listen, leave it with us, okay, and we'll see what we have to say. I mean, I presume for various reasons you want to be in the Inishowen area, am I correct in saying that?
Oh, yes, as I say, I grew up in Bridgend all my life, and you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be Bridgend, but some of the surrounding areas, I'd be happy.
All right, okay. It's just interesting. I just don't understand why you are not at least being given support for emergency accommodation.
Yeah, and that was a doctor's appointment. Like, I had to go to the doctor's there yesterday, but that was weeks and weeks and weeks I was trying to get a doctor's appointment just to go and see a doctor about my arm and get on the social welfare properly.
Okay. Right, Emmett, leave it with us. I hope your situation improves significantly. Thanks very much indeed. That's Emmett McGrath, homeless in Donegal, living in his Jeep for the last past year. Emergency accommodation support has been withdrawn, he says. No vouchers for that any longer. And also... No social welfare, no air code, of course, then, which makes everything else complicated. And you can understand Emmett's frustration. There was a one-bedroomed property available in Bridgend. He is originally from Bridgend, and you can understand his frustration, I think, that that went and he lost out there. We were talking just at the top of the show about children now more likely to be given pocket money digitally rather than via cash. A caller says, I think it's harder to conceptualise money if it's digital as an adult myself, but maybe as children will probably be digital their whole life, it'll be easier for them. I personally, and I've said this before, scratch record warning coming in, maybe it's just I'm can generally be an early technical adopter. I don't see any difference. In fact, I find it easier to track spending and what have you digitally, because even on the apps, you can break it down as to what you spent on food, electrical items, and the different types of stuff. Like, I find it very useful. But I understand that I might be an outlier in that regard in my generation, if that makes sense. Check out our social media on Facebook or on Instagram. It's all part of the Halloween fun. We're asking you what your favourite Halloween memories from your childhood are. Give us a comment underneath and see what the story is. 08660 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by writer and commentator Emma D'Souza. Good morning, Emma. Great to see you again.
Good morning, Greg. Good to see you.
Thank you very much for joining us. I can see over your right shoulder your husband, Jake. Hi, Jake.
I'm good. How are you?
I've heard a lot about you over the years, as they say.
Oh, mostly bad, I'm sure.
But you can't be too bad, because Emma fought hard for you. But anyway, people will be familiar with your story. Emma, you've been talking about how Jake is Irish. He chose Ireland. He's gone through, you know, the very protracted process to become a legal Irish citizen. But you've sort of been talking about how we treat the likes of Jake and others. I don't want to paraphrase it, because I want to hear exactly what you feel and what you've been saying.
Yeah, well, I think, Greg, I just have seen, like many people, I have seen an increase in hostility and I suppose intolerance towards some newcomer communities in Ireland. We can see it quite a lot on social media in particular. I mean, if you take a look at my post on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it today, the comments underneath that are pretty bad. And I was thinking about this over the weekend. We had the Dublin Marathon, and it just, again, when you see the onslaught of abuse that some people are experiencing who are very proud to have become Irish. And of course, I'm the proud wife of someone who became Irish. And I just feel like that it is deeply disturbing to see this continue to grow in Ireland. And I think when we consider it, we as people don't get to choose where we're born. We don't get a say in that part of the process. But if we're lucky in life, we sometimes do get to choose where we call home. And I do think that people who go through a protracted process, who find home in Ireland, who choose to be a part of the Irish nation and are very proud to become Irish, I think that this process that we see happening, this kind of discussion we see happening, where people are picking apart people who have become Irish, saying that they're not as Irish as people who were born here, that they can't be Irish because they haven't got a bloodline, this stuff is really ugly and is not good.
I think really where it came into focus for me, because I'm not necessarily personally affected by it, was when we had Irish athletes competing who were Irish, right, but weren't white. That's the simplest way to put it. And, you know, those celebrating them, I noticed on sort of some online platforms, those celebrating them were rounded on, effectively saying, you know, that person's not Irish, they're not Irish, they shouldn't even be running for Ireland, and so on and so forth. That's the type of stuff we're talking about, I presume. But I want to put it to you, and I suppose Jake, because Jake's got the lived experience as well, like, are we talking about the reality in Ireland, you know, on the ground, in the community, lived experiences, or are we focusing on a very vocal but a very small group of individuals, anonymous in many cases individuals, on the likes of the X platform, which is a breeding ground for hate and division?
Do you want to comment?
I could just say that the anonymity definitely bolsters the I guess, the confidence of some of these people. And I can say personally, I've both of us, of course, have been subject to these sorts of comments, but not as much in person. I think the anonymity definitely emboldens these sorts of people to be able to vocalize their reprehensible opinions. Yeah. So social media isn't a help.
Mm-hmm. See, that's it's interesting. I'd be curious just if that is just where these people live in this space, and they feel they can say whatever they like, or does that pull back the curtain and give us an insight into what's the views of a lot of people out there? Do you know what I mean, Emma? What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, I would say my opinion on this, Greg, is that there is real life people in Ireland who are holding these views. And we can see that from some of the protests we see happening in Ireland, and some of the even arson that we see, the targeting of asylum centres or places that are going to house people who are seeking refuge in Ireland. I do think it's a small minority, but they're amplified online. And if you actually look at a lot of the social media accounts that are making these comments, those hashtags, Ireland is full, they're actually based in the United Kingdom or they're based in the US. So you can see actually that a lot of sort of far right movements or far right agitators in other countries are actually trying to amplify the far right movement in Ireland and working together collectively through social media platforms to make it seem much larger than it is. Even on that post I have on online, you can see a lot of those accounts, you know, are hiding behind anonymity and also are not based in Ireland. But I do think in general, we do see an increase of hostility and intolerance happening in Ireland that could be being bolstered by all of this stuff online.
Yeah, because it can start off as a trickle and very quickly turn into a river. My concern is that, and it could be left, right, middle, centre, up or down, that side of the politics is not what I'm talking about, but it seems the way you get your point across, or the way you get into power, or the way you make money is through division. And it seems to be almost unanimous. You know, Kamala Harris, for example, in America, tried to run a campaign based on unity and not throwing mud and not name calling. And they've had to abandon that effectively. They've had to get down into the trenches and say, right, that ain't going to work. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't think it's necessarily one wing of politics. It just seems to be in this space, and I think an awful lot of it is happening via X, it seems to be in this space that division and anger and you're over there and I'm over here is how people are getting forward now. That worries me. Jake?
Yeah, I would share that concern too. And Jake, maybe you want to speak about the US perspective on that, the division.
Yeah, the division, I mean, there's always been division in the States in politics, red versus blue, but it's, I mean, maybe I can attribute it maybe to the fact that I've been away for a while, but it certainly seems significantly worse in the last couple election cycles. And I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone in believing that Donald Trump specifically has a significant role to play in that that collapse of civility between the two sides.
Yeah, but was it Michelle Obama says if they go low, we go high, but they've abandoned that themselves as well. They're just flinging garbage at each other, quite literally, in terms of language.
I would say, had Donald Trump not begun his political career, if you will, by attempting to throw Barack Obama's American citizenship and with his entire racist tirade to begin with, you know,
Barack Mohammed Obama was effectively what he was calling him in the election.
That was how he made himself popular. Before that, he was a two-bit reality TV star and a nepotism baby.
But he also spoke to 90 million Americans, which is that's a lot of people. You know, it's a lot of people. I know you're not having a go with them either, but it's not like he's radicalized 2,000 people and they've taken over a state. This is half of the US population. But back to the other point, Emma. I just wonder too, though, if the anger towards different communities is maybe a little bit of ignorance and frustration, but maybe some of it justified, just the anger going in the wrong direction. Okay, so I spoke to someone just a little earlier on, regular guy's homeless. Okay, his name was Dan for a house in Bridgend, and he's living in his Jeep for a year, and he's overlooked, and that house has went to a new member of the Irish community, let me put it like that. At the same time, you know, not far from him, there's numerous hotels which are accommodating people from outside the country, right? So if I were him and in his Jeep, and it wouldn't be motivated by hate or racism or anything, I would start going, well, what's going on here? I just wonder sometimes if people are frustrated, but sometimes they're putting the frustration, the path of least resistance, they're putting it in the wrong direction. What do you think, Emma?
I think the problem here is government policies. I think that when you look at the fact that we're now in the ninth month of record homelessness figures in Ireland, and you look at the policies that are being actioned, and the reality is there are lots of people in Ireland that don't feel the benefits of prosperity, that are in deprivation, that we see poverty levels increasing, and that kind of socioeconomic does damage the social fabric of any society. But it shouldn't be newcomers who are seeking refuge, who are coming to start a new life, who have chosen to come to Ireland. It shouldn't be those that are being persecuted or targeted, because it's not their fault. It's actually the government policies that are at fault in terms of how people are benefiting in Ireland. So I think, yes, there's absolutely issues around socioeconomic deprivation. People don't feel the benefits of prosperity in Ireland. But that then spilling over to target vulnerable communities is a really ugly thing, especially when you think about the history of immigration with Ireland and how many countries took in Irish people whenever they had to leave, either through, you know, the famine or through the conflict here in Northern Ireland. So when you think about the history of migration that Ireland has and the Irish people all over the world, this kind of targeting of vulnerable immigrant communities is particularly distasteful.
But I don't dispute that. I think we should all treat each other as humans, because that's what we are, right? But the reality also is that we can't talk about immigration and try and improve our lives as if it's historical. Unfortunately, many communities across Donegal and the country are incredibly depopulated of young, bright, intelligent people who don't see a future for themselves here and are now the next generation going out to the United States. And that then, this is where the situation gets incredibly complex. The anger is further increased, because their families see new Irish people taking their jobs and their opportunities. And as I say, I'm trying to choose my language carefully, but it just shows how complex the situation is. I think, though, if we are real free thinkers, though, and not sheep, but we do need to start to think for ourselves and see who's responsible, see what can change and who can make that change.
Yeah, well, hopefully the voters in Ireland will have the opportunity to have their say on who will be in government in the next election. We know there will probably be an early election call quite soon. And it's important when going into any election to think about, has your life improved since the previous election? If it has not, which party is more likely to be able to change things for you? But you are right, Greg, to talk about those issues around young people. We have it in Northern Ireland too. We call it the brain drain, where people leave, young people, and, you know, most of them don't come back. And that has an impact in terms of society and in terms of the outputs that we have, the talent that we have. And the only way that's ever going to be changed is through proper investment, through proper government policies. I mean, look at places like Donegal. You know, I'm in Fermanagh. The infrastructure in Fermanagh is really bad too. We're a very rural area, still no trains, not likely to get any trains anytime soon. And that does actually really impact, particularly more rural counties. And we really need to see significant investment, innovative new policies and ambitious policies that expand the reach of prosperity outside of places like Dublin.
Yeah, because I know you mentioned, finally, I won't keep you much longer. I know you mentioned earlier on, you know, Ireland is full, and clearly, it, you know, geographically it's not full. Our population was much greater than it was before. But in terms of services and the lived experience, there are those that feel they could argue it's full, because the hospitals are full. You can't get into the hospitals. Accommodation is full. That's why we have so many homeless people. You know, schools are full. That's why the classes are too big. So whilst obviously the country can accommodate much more people on the land mass, a lot of the services are full. And I'm not feeding into that rhetoric, because I don't think it's sort of motivated by the level of thought I'm giving it, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But there is an issue. And then people still see more and more people coming in and they see their situation worsen. It's a rich country, right? But that's not trickling down to the working middles. I don't like using classes, but anyway, you know what I mean? Those who aren't working and the working poor.
Yeah. I mean, look, you have, again, it comes back to that issue around government policies, Greg, because you have 160,000 vacant properties in Ireland, and we have a serious issue around homelessness. If those vacant properties were actually brought back in, then we would not have the systemic problems that we have in Ireland around homelessness figures. So it just keeps going back to the lack of government action to address these issues, whether it's health waiting lists, whether it's housing, whether it's other issues related to education. And we really need to see a significant shift. And I just want to kind of close back on this point around the targeting of newcomer communities. I mean, I haven't seen some of the stuff that is on there is absolutely vile.
It's very
in terms
not
of trying
Irish.
To say that people can't be Irish because they don't have a bloodline to Ireland. This kind of like push to this nationalistic, ethno-based idea of Irishness, I think it's really damaging to society in Ireland. And I think people are beginning to see it a little bit more. And those of us who want to push back against it, we really have to be quite vocal in saying that that's not the Ireland that we aspire to.
No, it doesn't feel very Irish, to be honest with you. There's so many. We just want to lose the run of ourselves as we try and get all this sorted and find out where we're going. Interesting points. Thanks very much. Great to see you, Jake. Thanks very much for joining us. And Emma D'Souza as well. Thank you. Take care of yourselves. All right. What do you think about that 086 60 25,000? I'm from New York, a blue state. I'm for Trump and his dream team. He's exactly what Ireland could be doing with, says a listener. Our president called us all garbage. Go Trump. That comes in from Anne. And this is, sometimes you do wonder if Joe Biden is, to some extent, working against Kamala Harris. He was on a Zoom call and either by accident or design, he described Trump supporters as garbage. Now, since then, a couple hours later, he was saying, no, I don't mean all of them. I don't mean 90 million of them. I just mean the one that went up and made a joke about Puerto Rico being garbage. And then overnight, Donald Trump comes out dressed as a garbage man, a bin man, you know, effectively. So it goes. Right, OK, Louise joins us now. Louise is from Strabane, but now her home is in Valencia. Louise, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm okay. I presume when you moved to Valencia, you would never have imagined that you would see the devastation that has been caused by this incredible downpouring of rain.
Yeah, to be honest, it felt like being back in Ireland with the rain. I never thought I was going to see rain like that here. It definitely was a shock, I think, to everyone in the city, not only people who aren't from here, but it definitely was different, to say the least.
And in terms of the areas affected, is it the centre of Valencia, is it the outskirts, is it all of it that was most devastated by these images? You know that you've seen them as well, Louise, mm-hmm. of the water running through the streets, taking cars and everything else with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Valencia in itself is quite a big city, so in the city centre everything is normal. The actual city centre, there's been no damages, there's nothing. You know, it's a normal day outside. Yesterday it was just, I looked outside and there was nothing outside my house. However, in the neighbouring towns, just on the outskirts of the city, are destroyed. And for example, like, I know people who were stranded in their houses because of the floods they couldn't get out yesterday. And, you know, their businesses are destroyed, their family businesses. I know that my partner, my boyfriend's Spanish, and his town has been damaged as well. But thankfully, everybody is safe and everybody is okay. But it definitely is a shock. And even though the city centre is okay, you know, everybody does feel the effects of it. So,
oh, for sure. Your boyfriend is currently stranded in Madrid, isn't he? Such is the impact it's had on transport systems.
Yeah, so Tuesday, like I commute to my work. It's half an hour outside of the city. So thankfully for me, I got the train back home just as normal. But on Tuesday, we were looking out the window thinking something's coming. Like it didn't look right, but we managed to get home. But after that, all the trains were cancelled because a lorry had fallen on the tracks. Oh, wow. So all of the trains were cancelled, and he went to get the train in Madrid. He was there working for the day, so he didn't know anything was going on. When he went to get the train, all trains were cancelled, and he's still in Madrid. He can't get home.
And just briefly, Louise, the conversation now is turning to how early the warning came. You'd be familiar with Ireland, our yellow, you know, orange, red warnings, and people give out to them. I hear even talk of a black warning being introduced in Spain. But was there any indication from, you know, from the authorities or the weather services that this was coming?
Well, on Tuesday morning, there was a weather warning on the, you know, on the apps and things saying that there was a yellow warning, a yellow alert. But outside it was fine. And then it was around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it started to get a bit worse. So in the morning, the rain was really bad, but then it stopped. And then it was in the afternoon where it started to really get worse. But if there was an alert, I can't remember the exact time, but it was when I had gotten home, there was an alert to everybody's phone. So everyone's phone started to go off saying that everyone had to stay inside. So there was alerts on Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday evening. And there was another alert yesterday morning sent to people's phones just to warn people that it's better to stay home and not to travel because of the roads and the train track closures and things.
Right.
So there was alerts sent, but... Yeah, it was.
I think really the conversation is were they so severe that people heeded them? And very sadly, lots of people that have passed did so in their cars. Louise, I'm really appreciative of you talking to us, and glad you're safe, and hopefully your boyfriend gets home safe soon. Thanks for your time. I do appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you for
having
me.
Take care. Okay.